We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
Hi, everyone. I'm Lisa Schmucke, the founder of EdWeb, and I wanted to come on and welcome you all to our presentation today because we're kicking off a new community and a new series of EdWebinars in cooperation with COSIN, which is the Consortium for School Networking. And the topic of these webinars is going to be on helping superintendents in a digital world. So our presentation today is our introduction, The Empowered Superintendent, Leading Digital Transformation. And our series host and community host for this whole year long is going to be Anne McMullen. And she's the director of the Empowered Superintendent Project. And then I'm just going to see if the EdWeb team can bring the slides back. Looks like we lost them for a minute there. There we go. Okay, great. And Anne is helping us organize panels with superintendents all year long. So our panel today is including Dr. David Schuler, who's the superintendent with Township High School District 214 in Illinois, and Dr. Chris Gaines, the superintendent with Mayville School District in Missouri. They are both leaders, have been leaders in AASA, and they'll tell you a little bit more about all their experiences as we go forward with the presentation. And I hope you'll join the community for superintendents that we've launched on EdWeb, which is called Super Connected. And as a member of that community, you'll be able to watch archive recordings and participate in discussions and download the slides. So we hope you'll join the community. You'll also get invitations to all the upcoming webinars that we're going to do. So Anne, I'm just happy to introduce you as our host and moderator of this session. Anne is the project director for the COSIN Empowered Superintendents Program. And Anne, you have such a incredible history in education. Do you want to highlight a few things for our audience today?
Thank you, Lisa. I'm happy to do that. So yes, I worked in the Klein School District just north of Houston, Texas for 34 wonderful years. I was a teacher and eventually became the director of educational technology. But about 5 years ago, my husband and I followed our two kids to Los Angeles, and that's where I am now. And I am doing my own consulting business really around leadership and ed tech and how those two things come together. And I'm just delighted to be working with COSIN as the project director for the COSIN Empowered Superintendents Program, which gives me the privilege of working with a number of superintendents across the U.S., and I'm so thrilled to have two of them here today, both of whom serve on COSIN's Superintendent Advisory Panel. In fact, Dr. David Schuler is the chair of that panel, and I'm pleased to introduce Dave to you now. So Dave, if you'd tell the group a little about your background.
Absolutely, Anne. Thank you so much. And I'm honored to be here with colleagues from around the world sharing in this conversation. I have the privilege of serving in High School District 214 as the superintendent. It's the largest high school district in the state of Illinois. We have six comprehensive high schools and four specialized programs. We have some amazing things going on in the district. I think I've been a superintendent now for 20 years in three different districts and a couple different states. And I've had the pleasure of serving in a small rural district with in growing enrollment and in a sprawling geographical district with a declining enrollment. And now in my current district, a suburban district with very steady enrollment. And, you know, what I would just suggest is regardless of your context, leadership in the ed tech space matters. And I'm honored to have served our colleagues as president of AASA during the 15-16 school year. And it's been just an awesome opportunity working with COSIN, and I'm looking forward to our time together today. And I get to now introduce one of the top superintendents in the country and a very, very dear friend of mine, Dr. Chris Gaines.
Well, thank you, Dave, but I think you missed a real important selling point of why people are coming to this webinar today, and it's you are the current National Superintendent of the Year, and we're really proud of you for that. You know, I've been a superintendent for about 18 years, served in three different districts, two rurals of varying sizes, one declining, one growing, And as Dave said, leadership in technology certainly matters, as well as building capacity as you launch that. I'm now in a suburban district. We're a little bit bigger. We're having a lot of fun here. And last year we got to open a new elementary school based around personalized learning. That's a school of choice. We had a number of folks around the country get to come visit it last spring, something that we're super, super proud of. And we'd invite anybody to come check out our Mosaic Elementary.
Well, thank you, Chris and Dave, both. I appreciate you being there. And now that we know who we are, I'd love to take a poll and see who all we have with us. So Regina will post up a poll, and we would like you to tell us what your current role is in education. And you can see the choices there, superintendent or district tech leader or a school administrator or a district administrator or teacher. Or if you have another role, please put that in and put that in the chat, and we'll give that just a few minutes to continue through. I'm thrilled to see so many teachers in the group.
We have 140 people online so far, too, which is great. Amazing. So all of you who are online, if you can tell us your role, that's great.
I would guess that as Dave and Chris made their way to the superintendent role, they may have served in two or three of these other roles as well. So those of us who work in education get great opportunities to put on different hats from time to time. So it's great to see that.
And it's great to see we have the Ministry of Education from Alberta, Canada here.
Oh, wonderful. 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 So this webinar will be a conversation among the four of us, but also among all of you. So please feel free to enter thoughts and comments in chat, as I see many of you already doing, and also into the question icon up at the top, and we'll try to address those questions either as we go along or at the end of the session today. But Lisa, I'm going to take your guidance on this. Do you think at this point we're good to move on or keep the poll open just
a little
longer?
Yeah, I think Regina, a tech team, if you close the poll, I think we're good. And actually, I'm going to drop off and be an observer, and I'll be in the chat and listening to you all, and I'll come back on later.
Well, we'll be happy to have you, Lisa. Thank you. And thanks to all of you for participating in the poll. So you heard us talk about these two acronyms earlier, AASA and COSN, C-O-S-N, and AASA is the superintendent's organization, and COSN has historically been, and it's in now 26th year, I believe, an organization that was originally created to support chief technology officers. So Dave, I wonder if you could tell us how these two came together. What was the history about coming together to create this Empowered Superintendent Toolkit, which ultimately led to the Empowered Superintendent Program?
Yeah, thanks, Anne. I think, you know, the most important thing from our perspective as a National Association of School Superintendents was we recognized that there was a disconnect between the leadership of schools and districts and the technology needs and infrastructure in buildings and in schools. And to be supportive of our teachers in our classrooms, we needed to rethink from a leadership perspective how we could be not only empowered individuals, but how we could empower our teams to ensure that we're not just spending dollars on technology, but they're actually being very intentional about how we transform teaching and learning in our classrooms through the use of technology and leadership. And so it was a great opportunity for us to get together and connect with COSN to create this Empowered Superintendent. I think when I first started in the superintendency 20 years ago, there was a real disconnect between our chief technology officers and our superintendents and our teachers. And I think what this partnership has allowed us to do is to create a much tighter connection so that we're all on the same page and we're all there in support of our students and our teachers.
Yeah, thank you for that, Dave. You know, you bring up a good point. I think one of the challenges historically that we have faced in education is that it can be a very siloed endeavor. You've got your job, I've got my job, and never the twain shall meet. So it's really great that came together. And Chris, when we look at this whole partnership, and as Dave described it, the need for the superintendent and the district leadership and the curriculum team and the IT team to work together, I would say, you know, 10 years ago, maybe even more recently than that, if a superintendent was faced with a question that had to deal with the technology, the answer might have been, well, go check with my IT guy. Why is that no longer an appropriate response, do you think? Or is it?
Well, I think the disconnect that they've talked about is really accurate. I think when we think about the evolution of ed tech in schools, or the progression of ed tech, and, you know, slowly moving into libraries and then into classrooms, I think we created these technology departments early on that were in and of themselves, and they were about technology. And I think within the last 10 years or so, we've talked more about tech integration and where is tech, where is that in the system? And it's not a separate thing. It's how do we use technology to enhance and support what we've got going on? And I don't think there's any person better in a district to look at that overall picture than the superintendent. You know, we're moving from a tech focus to an instructional focus. So I know a number of folks now have their technology as part of their curriculum department or part of their teaching. We certainly have, you know, those kind of technical pieces and all of the networks to manage and wireless routers and all of those things. But the people in our classrooms each and every day just need it to work seamlessly, and they need folks to help them understand how they can implement technology in their classroom as best they can. And I think that's where leadership of superintendents has shifted that from just tech for the sake of tech to intentional tech to support learning.
Yeah, and it's such a good point, Chris, that we've kind of learned all along the power of the technology, because many of us started in this 20 some years ago or even earlier, and it was just kind of an interesting new thing. But as it has grown and developed, it's been interesting that you make a point, you know, we need to always keep in mind that we are really in the learning business. We're not in the technology business, but we've got to leverage that technology to support that learning. So I appreciate your thinking on that. Dave, anything else to add about that connection?
I agree with everything Chris said. I think, you know, moving away from a focus of having technology report only to the finance and operations wing of a school district has to change. And I think it is changing in a lot of different places. And I think where we're heading is where we need to go, but we need to do it together. We need to make sure everybody understands that why. And I think that's why the whole focus on the empowered superintendent is so powerful, because it is bringing people along, making sure they understand the why, making sure teachers understand the work that we're doing is to support what's happening in our classrooms, not to buy another piece of technology because the neighboring district has it.
Yeah. Oh, that doesn't happen, Dave, ever, right? No. So let's talk about the initial launch of that partnership between AASA and COSIN was the development of this Empowered Superintendent Toolkit. And I'm going to have our two superintendents dive into the first module of this in just a bit. But I wanted our audience to be aware that that Empowered Superintendent Toolkit is available on the COSIN website, cosin.org/superintendents, for a free download for anyone to use. And so I encourage you to access that. It's divided into a few modules and then also a basic overview. But you can see in this description from module one, one of the things it talks about towards the end there is that a superintendent, or really a teacher, a principal, now that technology is so embedded in the teaching and learning, you have to be knowledgeable and you have to be comfortable in articulating the vision and answering questions that come your way. And that's really what this Empowered Superintendent Toolkit was about, along with some of the other resources that we will talk about today. It's to help us non-techie folks have the language that we need to communicate the information about the technology as it relates to teaching and learning. And so the first module is divided into five imperatives for technology leadership. And I'm going to invite our superintendents to comment on each of those five. The first one is to strengthen that district leadership. And we've talked a little bit about bringing all the teams together and the communications. So I will turn this one at this point over to Dave, if you want to begin on that one, and then Chris, take it away.
Yeah, I think one of the most important pieces of the five imperatives and this piece on the district leadership and communication is ensuring that everybody understands what the focus and the goals are. And I think too often in school districts or schools, you can have a list of 35 or 40 goals or priorities, or someone goes off to a conference and they come back and all of a sudden we've got a new initiative we need to launch, you know? And I think what this really focuses on is creating a laser-like focus on communicating the why and the what, and ensure that there's the opportunity for superintendents along with their teams and their districts to say, okay, this is our vision for the use of technology. It is to help personalize a path for every student. It is to ensure that we change the trajectory of our children's dreams and abilities by using technology to enhance teaching and learning in our classrooms. It's by making sure our parents understand why it might be okay for some kids to use a calculator in math class, right? It's so important that they have that understanding and that our teachers have that understanding. I mentioned, for those of you that were on a little earlier, before we started officially, you know, one of the things I communicate as a superintendent to all of our staff is it's okay to fail forward. If we have to try and push the envelope, and if something doesn't work, we have to be able to say, that's fine, it's version 1.0, what have we learned from this? And now let's go on and engage in the next version. And I think strengthening the district leadership can be done by empowering your team, but the only way you can empower your team, from my perspective, is ensuring everybody understands those non-negotiable goals and we're all working and rowing the boat in the same direction. And then once you have everybody rowing the boat in the same direction, then you've got to be so tight in those communications to make sure that everybody understands and internalizes and appreciates what it is that you're doing and why you're doing it. And so the one thing that I would say I've learned a lot in the last 5 years from a communication perspective related to technology leadership is to make sure that we brand the things that we do. And so we have an early college initiative, early college credit initiative going on in our district. And people could maybe tell you a little bit about it, but when we started years ago, but we branded it the power of 15. So every kid in our district has access to 15 early college credits before they graduate and walk across that stage. Now, by branding that piece, what it did, that initiative, what it did, it is allowed some power behind it and some in more focus by everybody to understand that it's a priority of the district. And so we have a lot of those, or a number of those in the district related to our technology programs and our initiatives supported by technology, I should say. And so as you strengthen that leadership and you focus on your communications, I'd really encourage you to think about just how you're communicating and how you take advantage of the opportunity to brand some things as you're going forward. Chris?
It's hard to add what David said today. But, you know, the notion of having a clear vision of where you want to go and taking that technology and how you're going to utilize it in my district. You know, if we look at personalizing learning, we've got to have the technology to make that happen. And that means we've got to look at one-to-one in elementary school. We're going to get that done in the next 12 months here in Melville. Pretty happy about that. And that's just one little piece.
Yeah, and I would just add, and before we move on, just a quick story from a colleague of mine who you know, sometimes we have successful matches and sometimes we don't as superintendents and communities and boards. And I had a colleague who it was really important to the board that they go out and buy a laptop for every teacher. And so they went out and they bought a laptop for every teacher, handed them out on the first day of Institute Day, didn't give any rationale for why or what they were going to do with them. And as the cars pulled away, there were laptops laying in the hallway. There were laptops laying in the on the sidewalk. There was no ownership because there was no understanding of that and communication and leadership on why this is important. So I feel so strongly that we can't just buy technology because it's the newest, greatest, latest thing. We have to be intentional about the why and how it's going to transform what happens in our classrooms.
Dave, that focus on the why first is so critical. And that is the essence of some of that leadership. that has to go on.
Has to go on.
Great. I want to move on to the second imperative, which is about raising the bar with rigorous, transformative, and innovative learning. And I would say that goes across the board, not just for students, but for everyone in the district, for learning and skills. And Chris, I'm going to ask you to talk a little bit about these two pictures that we're seeing. This is an innovation in learning that we would not have seen 10 years ago. What's happening in Melville with these photos that we're seeing of your students?
Well, I think we're seeing just real world application of the learning that's going on across our district. So whether that's robotics in an instance and using the FIRST Robotics program to move our students forward, or whether it's a smaller robotics piece at a middle school or elementary school, how can we leverage that technology? Because technology lets us reach really beyond our walls. You know, if we think about how we can connect with kids in other parts of our state or our region or across the globe, you know, we look at the participants here. We've got a number of folks from other countries. Technology allows us to make those connections and make those connections in real time. Last week, got to learn about a little school in Arkansas, and they're wanting to do something with mentoring for their students. They're in a small town. They don't have a lot of professionals in their town. They're using technology to connect those kids with professionals from across the country. And those folks are helping coach and mentor those kids towards what they think they want to do as a profession. I also think we can use technology and move from the consumer of information that I think we were, to creators, and how can we use technology to tinker? That's the robotics. It attracts kids. How can they build? How can they solve problems? How do they create their own products and then market and sell those products? So, you know, we've got a lot of programs in our schools that now work together cross-curricular. So we've got a class that's going to design a particular medical device, and then our business department is going to help them figure out how they're going to look at the bookkeeping behind that. And our marketing team is going to help them. How do they market that? So that technology allows us to bring that all together. But I also think we have to think differently about how we utilize the school day and how we use time within the school day. And as Dave has mentioned, let teachers take risks and let them work together, bring those classes together, work on those projects. The more relevant our learning is for the kids, I think they're just going to soak it up and love it.
Well, and Chris, that is the key word, relevant, that you mentioned, and that does become very transformative. The skill sets that you talked about are skills that students will need in their future, and many of them in their now. We have students creating their own businesses, being very entrepreneurial today. So the fact that you're leading that with them is so powerful. And I'm seeing that in the chat as well. You're getting lots of thumbs up and yay. And the notion of moving from being a consumer to a creator is, you know, that makes school a joy for kids again, you know, and that's really what we need to be about. As we look at that though, that is a fundamental change in pedagogy. That is not the way we were taught to teach. That is not the way many of us did teach. So how do each of you do that? How do you navigate that tricky path of transforming pedagogy to really create these compelling learning environments where it's no longer everybody sitting in a row facing the same direction? Dave, I'll let you start. You've got the first picture up there.
Number one, we ask the kids, right? You know, what would you benefit from? We try things out. We pilot things all the time. The slide on the left is one of our many classrooms that have whiteboard tables instead of desks. I allow myself as a superintendent, 3 edicts a year as soup. I don't use all 3 of them all the time, but about 4 years ago, I made the edict that we are not buying desks anymore. We're not going to buy any more desks. And that was met with a little bit of hesitancy, but, you know, you can see what happens. This, you know, we write a question on each of the sets of tables. The kids go around from station to station. They're able to get up and move. They're able to contribute. The teacher then can take, his or her iPad, take a picture of each table, in the matter of about 10 minutes, get what would have taken, you know, 2 or 3 days to do. And so it's such, if it's done right, it's such a savings of time. And I've got some more pictures coming up in a little later that will show you a little bit more of our learning environments. Mm-hmm. I just would reinforce what Chris said on the last slide too, about the rigorous opportunities for our kids to create. We created a Shark Tank-like experience for our kids. And our last three winners are all walking the halls of our schools and making tens of thousands of dollars with the solution they created while they were here. You can find, because our teachers are so amazing, if they have the support and if they have the permission to go out and be innovative and create, it's unbelievable the partnerships that they can make. And so I think that's just so critical for people to think about. And I'll turn it over to Chris, because I know the slide on the right is from his district.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Chris, I think you're muted.
Unmuted.
Yeah, Chris, can you unmute yourself?
Sorry about that. I like the idea of using, of thinking about space and time. So I mentioned Mosaic Elementary earlier. One of the things that we did in that building, and it's a small building, two sections per studio. We don't call them grade levels, we call them studios. But we just knocked out most of the wall between the two classrooms. Wow. And, you know, it's crazy seating. It's one-to-one technology. It's not one teacher with a set number of kids. It's two teachers. Kids are back and forth. They get have a lot of voice in what they're learning. They still, we're still holding them to the same standards, but how they get to that standard is a little bit different than we're in many of our other schools. And the collaboration in real time between teachers on individual students is just amazing. That's been really, really good for us. I know in the next slide, we got a little photo. Maybe one ahead from that. I'm getting ahead of myself.
That's okay. That's all right. I love the power and the collaboration that you talked about. You want me to back up to the previous one?
No. You're good. The next slide, I know these are some of Dave's photos, more of the learning spaces that he has. But the next slide, you see just kids playing outside. It looks like they're bowling, but those little balls are their little spheros that they've had to program and control to bowl. So, you know, how do you go outside? How do you look at anytime, anywhere learning? And what kids can be able to do. So that's why I think we need to rethink space and rethink time a little bit too, and how we use that.
Absolutely. And kind of within the whole system. Dave, I can back up, or we want to move on. Did you want to comment on any of these?
Unmuted.
Yeah, let me just mention a few things. You know, one, the slide in the upper left was a really easy way for us to redesign a classroom space and just mix it up a little bit, try and make it more like the world in which our students live in. So we've got some wood and some low seating there. Yeah. We've got some whiteboards. Yeah. We've got the carpet. Our kids design these spaces, and then the kids help build the spaces. Our geometry and construction students, those kids who may not be great at math on a worksheet, but maybe awesome actually building things, create and make, laid the floor and all that kind of stuff. So it's a really great space. We ask the kids for color suggestions and quotes for the walls, and it's just really cool. You look at that on the lower left. I mean, that's a group of kids sitting around. They all have their own device working collectively on a project. And you can't really see, but there's a TV screen there. And I love that picture because you see it all the time walking our schools. Look at how everybody's leaned in. They are fully engaged in that work. And then, you know, the lower right, we, as Chris, you know, talked about, you know, creating studios, we like to name things, brand things I mentioned earlier. So, you know, that's a used to be an old study hall room that we just completely reimagined. We don't have hallways anymore. We have interactive corridors. And we've got seating stations. We've got whiteboard walls. We have charging stations there for the kids. To try and, again, send the message of what we want, and the culture and the context is important. And we don't want desks and rows, and we don't want people to walk through it thinking that this is the school they went to. I mean, right? I mean, the reality is I have an 8 and a 6 year old, you know, Chris has a young son as well. If we're fortunate enough to have grandchildren, you know, our grandchildren will live to see the year 2100. And how many of our classrooms look like they did in the late 1800s?
You're right.
That can't happen. That can't happen, people. It can't. No. We've got to create this new compelling learning environment. And that's only done through changing teaching and learning.
Well, you too. Well, and that's a good lead in to our next topic, which is the area of professional development, because we've got to make that happen. And, you know, professional development has evolved over the years from a time when maybe all the teachers in a district were gathered together in the high school auditorium and had a speech for a couple of hours, and then everybody was supposed to go on their way. And it has really become much more personalized in the last several years. And that's so critical, because teachers are all doing different things. Their students are all different, and we need to find ways to bring that together. So certainly face-to-face professional development still occurs, but it occurs in different venues and different times. And you will each address that in just a minute. But we've also seen the leveraging of technology for professional development, and whether that's something like a Twitter chat that gets scheduled together by a group of teachers, or exactly what we're doing today and what EdWeb has done so beautifully, which is to create communities of learners that come together online together, whether it's for a webinar or a follow-up discussion, just to have that ability to talk to people, not just in my classroom next door, but like we're doing today, from all across the world. So I'd like for you all to talk a little bit about how you've changed PD in your own district, and how did you set up communities of practice for your teachers?
Unmuted. Sure, I'll start on this one. I just love this picture, you know, because how often are we intentional about creating the spaces we want for our teachers to focus on learning, right? Not to focus necessarily on teaching, but on their learning, on the art of their practice. And so this is, it's going to surprise you, we have a name for this space, but this is our collab lab. And it's this place for our teachers to get together. We've got whiteboard walls. You can see behind Mark and Kim there. And these are two teachers at one of our schools that are collaborating with a teacher at another one of our schools via Zoom. And so for us, it's allowed for so much more collaboration, working together, cross-building. We have tons of cross-building collaboration now that we wouldn't have had previously. And we don't have to pay for subs. We don't have to have people travel. You don't have to worry about any of that kind of stuff. You can just engage in these really rich, deep conversations in an authentic way. And so for us, the other thing we had to do is we had to carve time out of our day to focus on teacher collaboration, and not just your regular PLC time, because everybody, you know, a lot of places have PLC time, which that's great, but you need other time throughout the day for people to focus on cross-building collaboration, that maybe thinking about a skill that everybody's doing, literacy or numeracy, depending on where you're at as a building or as a school for your focus. And so we've been able to create these communities of practice within our schools, which has been really, really amazing. And then obviously taking that step up, participating in Ed Chats, EdWeb opportunities. You've got so many of them through this amazing EdWebNet. And so it's just awesome kind of work. Chris?
Wow, thank you.
Well, I think as Ann mentioned in the beginning, we're going to find this balance between this systemic PD that you need to move your district forward around an initiative, but how do you also personalize for teachers as well? And so we've done a lot of ed camps just within the district on a random 90 minutes here and there. But we've also started two pieces. The first was what we called our Instructional Innovation Academy. And we limited it to a number of teachers who were really just wanting to push the envelope. And what happens when we bring all of those people together? They learn from one another, push each other forward. So that's been a great community of practice. And then we kind of tweaked that a little bit and worked with another district to do kind of an Instructional Innovation Incubator. And those folks are even a little bit further ahead, trying just amazing things in their classrooms, coming together, see how it's working. You know, ASA supports communities of practice in a number of areas too, whether that's early learning or STEM education. ASA has a digital consortium, so you're looking at, you know, 40 to 60 superintendents from across the country coming together, visiting schools, seeing what's happening in districts, and then taking that home. We've got the same kind of community practice with our personalized learning piece. But there's just so much available there. And on the slide here, we've got this notion of transformative learning studio. And that's our district's way to somewhat try to personalize professional development for our teachers. We've got a number of things that we're working on. They're just little snippets, little classes. Teachers can load stuff into there. We can track teacher progress along the way. We do have some required pieces in there around tech integration that are in that as well. But our instructional technology division runs that. It's a great resource for our teachers. And if you look at that picture on the bottom right, you will actually see an old green chalkboard in the background.
A what?
So you can actually collaborate on old slate chalkboards. Now, this one happens to be in a building that was part of a military base back in the early 1900s. And we had a school in there for a little while. And now we have, we do a little bit of professional development and some other pieces in there. But sometimes that old technology, it still can work in today's world as well.
What I love what you're doing is applying that old technology in new ways of thinking. And I have to tell you, many of the questions or the comments coming through on the chat are things like, wow, love it, and that it makes learning fun. And when we say that, it's not just for the kids, it makes learning fun for the teachers. And you've broken down those siloed classrooms where it used to be you got your teaching degree, you were in a classroom, and you came out 30 years later, and that was it, you know? So you really, both of you, merged that together. Another area, and I want to really be mindful of our time because I do want to get some of the questions in, but this has been just so powerful, and I can tell by the reaction from our participants that they're just absorbing all of the great ideas you're putting forward. But another imperative for technology leadership is this issue of balanced assessments. And I'd like you both to just address the notion of how you leverage assessments to move your district forward. What do they look like? Is it different today than it used to be? How much of a component of a balanced assessment process is in place in your district? And I'll let either one of you
unmuted.
I'll jump in to start if you don't mind, Chris. I think from my perspective, you know, I think they look very different now than they did even 10 or 15 years ago. Because the reality is when NCLB came in, No Child Left Behind came in, for those of you that are in the U.S. or know about U.S. education policy, we shifted our focus away from teaching, I would argue, away from teaching what was in the best interests of our schools and our communities, and started focusing on teaching to a test so that we would all make adequate yearly progress. And for about a decade, that's what we did in our country. And that's awful. And so what we've said is that we don't, that's not important anymore. What's important are creating these balanced assessments and to put some joy back in teaching. Because if we put joy back in teaching, we'll put joy back in learning. And it's that simple. And most of our teachers didn't get into teaching because they love to teach. They got into teaching because they love to learn their subject matter. They love to learn about kids. And so we're trying to create ways through the Empowered Superintendent Toolkit and partnerships like this to find ways to support our teachers' love of learning. And then from my perspective, we hand over the right to create our assessments to our PLC, to our PLCs to work together. I don't look at any of those common finals. It doesn't matter to me. My teachers are professionals. They're going to ensure that those common finals are created in a way that assesses what was done in that quarter or that semester or that year. And all I ask is that when they're done with those assessments, they look back at how the students did to see how they can provide further support to those students that may not have gotten an answer right, or those that did. And I had one quick story, because I'm very mindful of the time, but I was at a PLC who was reviewing a math course assessment. And this one teacher was so upset because he couldn't understand why the majority of his students got number 27 wrong. And he was just could not figure it out. And all of a sudden, I'm walking down the hall, and about 20 minutes later, he comes running and said, I figured it out. I was gone that day, and I wrote the note wrong for the sub.
Oh, no.
Now, tell me, in what world would you have a teacher that would be that, you know, upset about what happened and why I couldn't teach that? And it was, and I loved it. I said, that's not a big deal at all. Fix the notes for next time. Like, that's awesome. I can go back and engage with your kids. You know, but if you can create that level of professionalism among your teachers, which we should be able to create that culture as superintendents, the creating the balance assessments are fine as long as you give them permission not to only focusing on teaching to a test.
Yeah. Oh, that's so smart. Chris, anything to add to that?
Well, I kind of got a little bit of a similar story around a group of math teachers looking at an assessment and looking at the assessment across the department and kind of going, you know, our kids just, you know, and then the next week, same data by teacher level broken out. And the teachers looking at it and going, okay, somebody here in this room is doing something different because on this piece, their kids are performing way better than the rest of us. So what are you doing? We've got to figure that out because all kids need to have the same access to that quality of instruction. So it really, I think we can use real-time assessments to really drive the ability for teachers to collaborate. So there's a lot less variance in performance from classroom to classroom and grade level to grade level. But I'm more interested in my local assessments than any of our state assessments.
And what both of you have done is taken the punitive factor out of the assessment process, that it's part of the learning process. Like we said earlier, this worked, this didn't work. And if it's working somewhere else, what are they doing? What's the magic that I can capture? So, Chris, I'm really glad you mentioned that. So I'd like to take another poll, and we've gone through five different areas of technology leadership, five different imperatives. And I'm just wondering from the poll, and Regina will be putting that up in just a second, we want to kind of get a sense in your role, whatever that might be, what do you perceive to be the most challenging of these five? And we've heard wonderful success stories from Chris and Dave both on how they've done it, but I know they didn't do it with just a snap of the fingers and that it was a process. So we're just curious to know, as you look at these five, is it strengthening district leadership and communications, or raising that bar for rigorous, transformative, and innovative learning? Or perhaps it's the transforming of pedagogy, or supporting PD, or the issue around assessments. What do you find of those five to be the most challenging? And what I'm seeing on the screen now is it's a lot between the first and the last. And that's very interesting to me. It gets back to the point of leadership and communication being so critical and having the right language and having, you mentioned, Dave, earlier about branding, that you needed to brand your things that you were doing so people would know about them and know how to respond to them. But we're getting almost a 33-33 split between that and the balanced assessments. And I think you both addressed how in the last several years assessments are necessary, but we may have been assessing the wrong thing or reusing the results in ways that weren't the most productive. I don't know. Do either of you have anything to add on that?
I agree with everything you just said, Ann. We have an incredible state superintendent in Illinois, and one of the things he always says is, we have to use our assessments to improve and enhance instruction rather than create a rank and spank system, right? And I think for so long, that's exactly what we've done. We've been using the assessments to judge failure rather than to do exactly what Chris said in his, is to create ways to make sure that we lift up what's working. That's why I get so frustrated when we focus so much on the lowest performing schools. Why not focus on those schools that are doing everything great and then try and share the best practices with other schools that may not be as great?
Very smart. Very smart. Regina, I'm going to ask you to go ahead and close the poll at this time because I do want to march on with this. But thank you. And that was interesting to see that perspective from our group. Dave, I'm going to ask you to just share a very quick highlight of this initiative that is going on in your district with AASA.
Yeah, so AASA, the School Superintendents Association, has launched a national movement to redefine what it means to be college, career, and life ready, focusing on our kids are more than a score that they earn on a standardized test. It's a really research-based approach to completely reimagining what public education should look like K-12 and beyond, really birth to careers. And so if anybody's interested in that work, please reach out to me. Check out our website, redefiningready.org, or you can. There's a link from our AASA website as well. We have a national conference coming up, or a national summit coming up on October 1st that we'd love to have you come. And it's a site visit to our district in District 214 to see all the different academic pathway and career pathways we have. So feel free to reach out if that's of interest to anyone.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Dave.
And I'd like both of you to talk about this issue of relevance. And Dave, I know you've got a project in place in your district around pathways. Can you tell us 30-second shot on that, please?
Yeah, so I believe it's really important for us to ensure that our students understand why what they're doing in school is relevant. And it's not just to go from class to class or take a test and move on to the next grade. So everything in our school, all of our schools are in pathways that it's student selected and student choice. All of them have access to post-secondary credentials, industry credentials, and every student in our district, all 12,000 of them, will have an external workplace learning experience by the time they graduate, an internship, externship, some sort of external workplace learning experience, to make sure they find out if that is something they want to pursue, or more importantly, if it's not something they want to pursue. They should have those experiences while they're with us, I would respectfully suggest. Chris?
Chris, there.
So our programs that are the most relevant is our CAPS network programs. We cannot meet the student demand. We just don't have enough business partners. Our students want that kind of piece. We had a new program last year we call MyPath, and students are able to create their own experiences. And they find out exactly what Dave just said. Maybe they thought they wanted to do something. They get a little look at it, and they're like, you know, that may not be for me. So we had a student last year, really, really wanted to be a teacher, spent a few months in a classroom and said, you know, I don't think I really want to be a teacher, but I really like designing classroom space. Ah. So she's now off at college becoming a designer, and she wants to specialize in school design and classroom design.
That's so wonderful. I mean, there's so many aspects of education where we need smart minds coming together. So it's a great story. Thank you for sharing that. I want to briefly just share with our audience what else is available in the Empowered Superintendent Toolkit. Chris and Dave have done a great job of walking us through how they have implemented some of the various capacities in the first module. The second module deals much more strongly with the connection between the superintendent and the chief technology officer. And so you will see in there a lot of tools and resources to use. There's a self-assessment for superintendents to take. Excuse me. There's also, as you see on the list there, if you're looking for a chief technology officer and you need to hire one in your district, there are some job descriptions there that you can use, interview questions for superintendents to use as they hire their chief technology officers. There's information about COSEN-CETL program, CETL, which is a certification for chief technology officers and a great training program for them. So again, those resources available for free on the COSEN.org/superintendent website. So we hope you'll take a look at those as well. The other thing that we have provided quite recently is what we call some one-pagers around critical issues. And if you go to the webpage, you'll see a critical focus issues, and they are truly one-page infographics. If all of a sudden you have a board member who's asking you, what are we doing around accessibility? Here's a quick one-pager for you to know the background and the language that you need to communicate with your board, with your community. So we have them on a variety of topics. You see three of them there, looking at even at online assessment, as we were just talking about assessment and how we use it. The issue of student data privacy, and which is a growing issue every single day, learning for leadership for mobile, for digital learning, and the other three are around network design, strategic planning, and then access for everyone, closing the homework gap, looking at digital equity. So again, those are there for free download for all of you at the COSEN.org/superintendent's website. Look at the critical issues, critical focus areas link, and you will find that there. I do want to let you know that our next webinar, the EdWeb COSEN webinar, will be on student data privacy, and I'm very pleased to have two superintendents, along with Lynette Atai, who is the project director for COSIN's privacy initiatives. We will be chatting together around how we tackle this. This is another issue that I think 5 years ago, maybe we thought it was important, but you don't read a headline today that isn't something about data privacy. And we've got to figure out how we're using data to leverage that data for instruction, but also follow the rules around student data privacy. So I hope that you all will join us on October 8th at 5 p.m. Eastern Time for our webinar on student data privacy. I would really like to ask Chris and Dave both to think about if you were teaching a course in Superintendency 101, what is the best advice that you would give either to a brand new superintendent or one who is aspiring to be a superintendent, whatever their current role is in education? And I'll let either one of you pick that up. But what is that nugget of advice that you would give?
Unmuted.
I would just say give permission to your principals and your teachers to dream and support them in their ability to make those dreams happen.
I'll take a little more personal approach in your own health and tell you, you've got to take care of your big rocks first. You've got to know what your big rocks are for your family or your church or work and whatever that is. And you're not going to find a work-life balance because that kind of intimates equality, but you've got to find a rhythm, and that rhythm is going to be different at different stages in your career and different stages of your children's lives, how much time you can spend in the office and how much time you can be with the family. But a friend of mine says, I have this imaginary sign on my garage door. And I pull up, I read it every day. It says, the people here love you.
You know, you can't beat that, both of you. I mean, Dave, you have used the term dream and allow students to dream and teachers to dream and administrators to dream. And that's really about being aspirational and reaching higher and permission to try to do that. And then, Chris, the balance with that, you're not going to go anywhere if you don't take care of yourself. So you need to take care of those priorities, yourself, your family, and so forth. So I did not know what either one of you were going to say in regard to this question, but you've nailed it. And I see that from our participants as well. As we begin to wrap this up, I want to just mention to you quickly a little book I have written called Life Lessons in Leadership, and you can check it out on the website. And this is because not only are we growing leaders to be superintendents, we are growing leaders every day. And so this one is targeting leaders ages 8 to 88. And all of us in education and parents need to be cognizant of our leadership roles and how we grow those in our students and our kids. I also want to remind you that all of the information that Chris and Dave shared today that we went through on the Empowered Superintendent is available on the COSIN website at cosin.org/superintendents. You will see a link there to download the free toolkit. You got to just fill out a little information, then you will download it. The links to those one-pagers under the critical focus areas are there in PDF form. You can just click on them and get them as you need them. You'll also be able to see who all is serving in that COSIN Superintendent Advisory panel, as well as the state superintendent associations who have endorsed the program. And if your state association is not on there, I would love to talk to you to see what we can do to maybe add you to that. So hopefully you will take a look at that. We would love for you all to join us in this collaborative conversation. And we also have an opportunity for a face-to-face meeting. And Chris, would you tell people about this one coming up?
You bet. We're really looking forward to our next ASA National Conference on Education. We'll be in Los Angeles this February and talking about effective leadership and how that creates success. It's always a great program, time to connect. We've got some great keynote speakers. We'll have Bill Daggett talking about re-envisioning learning. We've got Jim Abbott talking about overcoming adversity. We also have some thoughtless sessions through the day. We'll have Kim Marshall from the Marshall Memo talking, as well as David Berliner. He's always interesting. But maybe one of the most fun things of the whole conference is that when Dave will pass off his National Superintendent of the Year title on to whomever that's going to be for the next coming year. So that's always a great deal to see all the superintendents of the year from each of the states and learn and see who's going to be stand out as the leader across the country. So that's always fun. It's a good time. We'll have a great conference in Los Angeles. I hope you can join us.
Yeah, I look forward to that. Now that I live in Los Angeles, I'm looking forward to welcoming all of you, and we should have a great time together. And we will have a number of sessions at the AAS conference featuring various superintendents from the COSIN advisory panel talking about a lot of different aspects around leading technology. So we're really happy to be a part of that as well. And I would be remiss if I didn't also invite you to please join us later in Portland in April for the COSIN Leadership for Learning, the annual conference. So looking at envisioning 2030, I mean, Dave was talking earlier about, you know, at what time frame future grandchildren might be living in. But, you know, 2030 is going to be upon us sooner than we know. So looking at that and looking at various resources and conversations that we can all have together in Portland, Oregon in April. So I hope some of you are able to join us there as well as in February in Los Angeles for the AASA NCE conference. And I am going to now click on our questions and let me see what's there. I'll throw this out to either one of you and let you answer. First question was, what age do you think is a good age to start using technology?
Oh.
Unmuted.
I think that totally depends on the curriculum and what the intent is and in what way. I mean, my kindergartner, when he was in kindergarten, was using technology from a reading support perspective. So I think it all depends on what the intention is and how it's implemented.
Excellent. At what age do you let a student or a child start watching television?
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with Dave. It's how you use it and the amount of usage.
There's a question here because you both spoke very eloquently about changing up the space for learning, the design of the space. And the question is, if you've changed it up, how often do you change the design of the space again? And the comment that goes along with that is that they really love the fact that students got to help in the design. But if, for example, Dave, you've set up this new design with the whiteboards as desks, does that room get changed again at any point?
Unmuted.
Oh, of course it will. Yeah. I mean, we'll continue to monitor how our students learn, and we want to create learning environments that meet each generation's learning styles. And I think we have to be nimble and adaptable to ensure that as new generations come into our schools, we don't take the approach of trying to unlearn them and how and who they are and reteach them in the way we learned, and rather meet them where they learn and where they live. And so that's what we'll do with each generation.
And the last question I want to pose to you as we get ready to wrap up had to do with school librarians and what leadership role are librarians taking in this whole technology transformation in your school district?
Unmuted.
We've been really fortunate. Oh, go ahead, Chris, you answer this one.
Well, I think back to kind of the beginning of EdTech in schools, and for me, it was our librarians were the technology leaders in the district. They had more technology than anyone else. I think we've evolved a little bit away from that as more technology has entered classrooms, and now kids have them in their pockets and in their backpacks. But I think librarians have a key role to play as the resource for every educator in the building, as well as being a resource for every student, and to be able to show people how to utilize that technology and how they can leverage it to move them forward.
Very important. Dave, anything to add on that one?
Unmuted.
Nope, I'm good. We're short on time, so I'm respectful of that.
Thank you. So I want to just express my appreciation to Dave and Chris and what incredible leadership and thinking they were sharing with us today. And Lisa, I will turn this back over to you at this point.
Thank you all. This has been such a wonderful presentation. I'm glad I was able to sit back and just enjoy it all and see the incredible comments on the chat. You'll get a copy of that, but the affirmation and support from the chat was really something. And, you know, when we talked about, you know, this being about helping superintendents deal with technology, I don't think I would have anticipated how much of the conversation was not about technology, just like we said from the beginning. So it's about connecting students to real world experience and redesigning the learning spaces. And I love, I so love this idea of spotlighting what works. And let's not point to what is a failure. Let's point to the successes and share it. And that is what, you know, we are all about at EdWeb all the time. We've had 1,200 presenters over the years do exactly that. And this is a perfect example of it. So this recording will be sent to everyone who attends today. So please share it. Share it with your superintendent. Share it with your aspiring superintendents. We also know that publications like eSchool News and EdScoop have asked us to report on this, so they'll be publishing information on it. So we'll continue to have people watch this as a recording and hope that more and more people will come and join us in the presentations coming in the future. And Dave and Chris, I hope you'll join us for those too. So I really can't say how much, and I think this is better than I could have dreamed of. Well, and we're talking about, you know, allowing ourselves to dream, and here we are.
Yeah, thank you.
And I think we maybe have one more slide, which is just to encourage everyone to join the community on Super Connected, Empowering Superintendents and District Leaders. So thank you very much. We only went over a couple of minutes, and it was a packed hour. And I just can't say thank you enough.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.